हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 92, chapter 89, chapter 10. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, by the grace of Krishna, Arjuna could understand that whatever opulence there may be within this world is an emanation from him, meaning Krishna. Any opulent position a person may have within this world is due to Krishna's mercy. One should therefore always be in Krishna consciousness and complete gratefulness to Lord Krishna, because whatever one may possess is all bestowed by him. Okay, footnote 20. This phenomenon is especially expressed in the beginning of the 15th chapter of the first canto, where Arjuna is leading up to the unfortunate news of Krishna's disappearance from this world. Yeah, so he's saying anyone, it's not just devotees. Whatever anybody has, it's all by Krishna's grace. Right? So some it may be due simply to their material endeavor, and Krishna reciprocates with that. And others, then, it's with their spiritual, and Krishna reciprocates with that. But the point is whatever benefit one has on any level is actually coming from Krishna. So therefore, people should be Krishna conscious. And in complete gratefulness, then that's actually the solid position in when one begins devotional service. Right? It means that you are either doing devotional service because of a natural, a spontaneous attraction, or one's doing it because of gratefulness. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, gratefulness is also known as Vaidhi Bhakti. Right? A question may be raised. The Lord is known as Brahmanya Deva, the worshipable deity of the Brahmanas. So why was he inclined to put a Brahmana into such a terrible condition of lamentation over one son after another until the tenth son was taken away? The answer is that Lord Mahavishnu was so eager to see Krishna that he did not hesitate even to give trouble to a Brahmana. Although giving trouble to a Brahmana is a forbidden act, Lord Vishnu was prepared to do anything in order to see Krishna. He was so eager to see him. After losing each of his sons, the Brahmana would come to the gate of the palace and accuse the king of not being able to give the Brahmanas protection, and of thus being unfit to sit on the royal throne. It was Mahavishnu's plan that the Brahmana would accuse the Kshatriyas and Krishna would be obliged to come see him to take back the Brahmana's sons. Sukadeva Goswami.
This whole pastime is proving that Mahavishnu is also under Krishna.
Yes. Means we've already established that Krishna is above Brahma and Shiva. Right? But then also, even within Vishnu Murtis, then he is also.
Mm-hmm. In that translation to which Mahavishnu is speaking, there he is not presenting himself as coming from Krishna. He is saying that you are my incarnate. So, like why Mahavishnu is not explicitly stating that my origin, you are my origin.
But why does he have to do that?
Is it a reality?
Yeah, so many things are reality. Means Arjuna saw the universal form, reality. How did that go when it comes to rasa? Right? So, there's Krishna, right? Or let's take it so it'll be more easy. You have Lord Chaitanya, right? Then Lord Nityananda is his elder brother. And they're more senior than that. I mean, so Lord Chaitanya respects Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya both respected Dvaitacharya. What's the problem? We want to go reality. Krishna's first. He expands as Balaram, and then Balaram expands as Mahanarayan. Or in this case, a Purusha avatar. You know, from him. Right? So here in this case, he's representing that aspect. So in relationship, what's the problem? Right? So, it also is said that Krishna does not find as much pleasure in the prayers of Brahma and Shiva as he does in the, you know, the conversations of the, you know, residents in Vrindavan. You know, that just deal with them as a friend or as a son or as a, does that make sense? Yeah. So you have to understand that truth is important in that is it establishes the proper situations and relationships. But in dealings, it's not about truth. It's about the exchange. You understand? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna exhibit, you know, if someone's unqualified, then yes, it's about tattva. But here, what's the problem? Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna exhibited many other similar heroic pastimes in this world. He apparently enjoyed the pleasures of ordinary human life, and he performed greatly potent fire sacrifices. The Lord, having demonstrated his supremacy at suitable times, he showered down all desirable things upon the brahmanas and his other subjects, just as Indra pours down his rain. Right, because the rain comes, it just goes everywhere, like that. And even places that the rocks don't require the rain, but the rain also is there. So even people who don't require, then they're also getting. So it just makes for a very, very auspicious environment. Now that he had killed many wicked kings and engaged devotees such as Arjuna in killing others, the Lord could easily assure the execution of religious principles throughout the agency of such pious rulers as Yudhishthira. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, remembering many other feats of Krishna, Sukadeva speaks with tears in a choked voice. Though he wanted to describe them all, he summarizes everything in three verses in sorrow because of the restrictions on Parikshit life. Right? Because we're at the end of the Bhagavatam. With his voluntary fasting. In the manner stated, Krishna displayed excellency in this world, many similar... In the manner stated, Krishna displayed excellently in this world many similar astonishing acts. He enjoyed all seemingly material objects as pastimes. He performed most extraordinary sacrifices. Right? Because he's all doing things in relationship with the devotees. We'll take things that seems to be ordinary because we use these same things for ourselves. That's what makes it ordinary. It's not the activity that's ordinary. It's that it's done without a connection to Krishna, in relationship to Krishna. That's what makes it ordinary. Conclusion. Any opulent position a person may have within this material world is due to Krishna's mercy. Right? That's anyone. Anybody. Materialists, devotees, in other words, in those three categories, right? The devatas, the rakshasas, and the demons. Yeah. By the grace of Krishna, Arjuna could understand that whatever opulence there may be within this world is an emanation from him. One should therefore always be in Krishna consciousness, in complete gratefulness to Lord Krishna, because whatever one may possess is all bestowed by him. A devotee is callous to all subjects other than his engagement in devotional service. Right? Because if it doesn't enhance devotional service, what's the point? Right? You can say it's interesting or this or that, but the point, what will it do for you? We'll see. It won't have taste. Right? Well, devotional service, that always has taste, that's always increasing. This mode of life is the highest perfectional stage from which one can be elevated to the spiritual world, back home, back to Godhead. The devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are especially attracted by the highest material quality, goodness, and the qualified Brahmana is the symbolic representation of this goodness, right? So devotees are naturally attracted by this position of goodness. Why? Because that pure state, it makes it so easy to remember Krishna, be absorbed in Krishna, do things for Krishna. These other things that are generated from passion and ignorance, then they themselves are inherently not favorable. Not that you can't connect them, but why would you be endeavoring to connect something that doesn't connect well or doesn't create a proper atmosphere when things that could connect are available? Now, yes, by habit or that, like before, we were saying before, that the devotee being rightly situated, then things may not always go ideal, but that's not his determination. It's just that's bad habits or that's previous samskaras or like this. But he's trying to move forward, right? Does that make sense? So that's why, you know, again, bringing up the point is that's why we don't identify with these lower things. It's just not favorable to devotional service. Not seriously. You might joke around about it, but it's not serious. One would never, like, identify with these things and then say this is important and it's just as good in devotional service as regular sadhana. In fact, it's better because it fits the modern age and this and that, blah. It's nonsense. Because those things opposed to the mode of goodness, how are they going to be able to function in pure goodness? Right? Pure goodness just means it's goodness for Krishna. Right? Because technically, how can passion and ignorance be for Krishna? Right? If we take passion, then passion means technically it's the correct things that is recommended in the scriptures, whether you know the scriptures or not. But instead of doing it from a detached point of view, you're doing it from an attached point of view. Right? So even if we're doing it properly, but we're doing it because of material identification, it takes on the mode of passion. So now, if it's connected to Krishna, it's supposed to be pure. That means you'd have to give up the attachment to the desire. Otherwise, just know it's just mixed devotional service. And never try to compare mixed with pure devotional service. It's just not done. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Now, so that means is that passion being properly means you have to remove the element of passion, which is doing it for yourself, to do for Krishna. Then it takes on the position of goodness. Right? So it'll be what's recommended. It's just not the recommended attitude. It's done with attachment instead of out of duty. Right? Means you do this because you're supposed to. That's recommended. Or I do the exact same thing because I see the benefit I'll get. That's the difference between goodness and passion. But it's the same proper activities. Ignorance is the opposite. What's the mode of goodness you say is the mode of ignorance? What's the mode of ignorance you say is goodness? So what the Shastra recommends, you'll say that's bogus. And what's not recommended, you'll say, no, this is how we have to do it. How will that be engaged? Do you understand? We're talking from the mentality of that one has pride and one's attached to these things. We're not talking about someone who doesn't. Maybe in the mode of ignorance, but he's contacted the devotees, they try to do their best. We're not talking about that person. We're talking about those who identify with their material upadis and try to claim that that engagement is as good as devotional service. Does that make sense?
Individually understand that we should not identify with the lower modes.
We should not
identify with the lower modes.
No, if it happens because of habit, that happens. You know, but when it comes up, someone can point it out. But when someone points it out, and now you make a philosophy out of it and try to claim that it's as good as what everybody else does, that's just what's our guy? Who was that guy in France? Descartes or something?
Descartes.
Yeah, it's Descartes. Descartes acting like a rat bag. His other intellectual friends tell him, hey, you know, why don't you, you know, follow some decorum here. And he makes a philosophy to prove that he's right. It's the same principle. We're not saying anybody's as degraded as him. But it's the same principle. It's all about ourself, our attachment, our things. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be careful about that. Otherwise, we get the same thing. It just, that will keep you in this material world. All this opulence, everything, it's all come from Krishna. So since it's coming from Krishna, then we should be offering it back to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's just like going down to the Ganga. You take the water from the Ganga and through tarpana offer it back to the Ganga. You don't bring your own water. Well, that's water and this is water, and so this one, you know, has less bacteria, so this is better. So I'm offering this one to the Ganga. I've heard worse. That's good. Okay. Therefore, a devotee is attached to the brahminical stage of life. He is not very much interested in passion or ignorance, although these qualities also emanate from the Supreme Lord. But it's not the qualities that Krishna prefers to be worshipped with. So you can engage them, yes, and get purified, but at some point it has to be about Krishna. In these modes, those in the mode of goodness have a greater chance to be elevated to the spiritual world, back home, back to Godhead. It's just the point, right? That's just what we try to do. The devotees become uninterested in the material world, not simply because of theoretical understanding, but because of practical experience. Like we saw one letter where the devotee is writing Prabhupada that he went back to visit relatives or something during some program, maybe it was a wedding or funeral or something. And he wrote back to Prabhupada that, you know, previously when he'd been with them, he was comfortable. But this time he went back, he didn't feel comfortable at all. You know, everyone's so materialistic and this and that. And Prabhupada said, oh, this is very nice. You're making advancement. You know? So it's not just theoretical, it's practical experience. When a devotee realizes the effect of association with the Supreme Lord, he naturally hates the association of so-called society, friendship, and love. This isn't material hate. It just means he's not interested in mundane. He's only interested in spiritual. This detachment is not dry, but is due to achieving a higher status of life by relishing transcendental mellows, because he's tasted that relationship of serving Krishna. Therefore, these other things aren't interesting. You know, it's just natural. Just when you're younger, you may have certain tastes, and as you grow up, then you change those tastes. Does that make sense? Go ahead. You had something?
Yeah. I was just thinking this point of identity, it's a very difficult thing to change.
Yes.
And devotees, they have some fear of losing their own identity. So then...
But what's to lose?
For some, it's a lot.
So you mean that there's an anxiety that by losing one's identity, Christmas will shift from January 6th to December 25th? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
September.
Huh? But if you really want to lose it, it should move. Actually, I think it's August. Sometime like that, August, September.
So then...
And if you really want to get into it, then he's from Brahmaloka, so then what's the point? So his birthday's about,
5,000 years ago.
Yeah, quite a long time ago, yeah. Sorry, go.
So then, not that we don't have identity as devotees, but it's not our first identity. We have, like, and then...
There's a cue.
Yeah, there's a cue. Like, one devotee commented on another, said, I like such and such, because he's from New York, he's a Jew, and he's a good sadhaka.
I mean, so can't get better than that. What do you want? I mean, what's the not like about that?
But his sadhaka form is not the first primary form.
Well, it is a descending process, right? I'm saying, in joke and this and that, then when they say, if everyone's serious, that's another thing.
Yeah.
But it's that the point is that Rupa Goswami does make the point of swajati, is that you look for those who are more advanced than you, but a nature that you can actually relate to. So it's not actually a problem that there's that, as long as the focus is about Krishna. It's about Vaishnava association and serving Vaishnavas and things like that. And so, is that being part of a fund, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I remember, yeah. So, but what we're meaning is that if one makes a philosophy that won't allow you or others to move forward, in fact, if people have moved forward, you try to pull them back, like the Mauritian Frog program, then this is not favorable to devotional service. So you're going to. But the point is let's say that person, now, there's a certain mentality they're talking about when that is there. It may be typically, how you say, represented by that particular combination. But if someone else had that particular, let's say, just for example, that particular cleverness, you know, that particular practicalness, you know, that kind of, how you say, yeah, a certain realism in the relationship, but not too positive, like that. And, you know, and they're committed to devotional service, but if you found that in somebody else coming from a different community or background, that would be the attractive feature. Because it's not technically that thing, it's just that kind of typifies. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, it's more a mentality, though you can articulate it in this, and it makes it fun, because that person probably has many other also friends who are not in that particular category. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a problem that you like being with certain people, but you can't say, make a philosophy that only these people, this is the real thing. You know what I'm saying? Because just like take that, okay, if you take New Yorkers, you know, then the whole point is a certain group of people will be able to relate to that. And it will also resonate in other places in the world in similar kind of mentality. But it won't work out west. Just like the West Coast mentality won't work in other parts of America or the world. Some people can relate to it, but probably more can relate to a New Yorker than to the West Coast. Right? Because they're more open to culture and variety and all that, while the West Coast tend to not be very open to cultures outside of whatever they feel is right. You know what I'm saying? But you're going to find that mentality everywhere in the world. Someone's from London, there's some aspect of it, but there'll be something that is there in other places. So whoever it resonates that you can relate to them, how they speak, you can understand what they're saying and apply it in your life. They're taking devotional service, they're thoughtful, they're applying it in their life and getting some success. They're sharing that with you. You can relate to it. That's the kind of devotees you want to be with. Because someone else is applying it in their life, but you can't relate to it, you can't use that. Now, if it's general like kirtan or other things like that, then there's not a problem. But in personal, you know, intimate dealings, you know, dadati prati grinati guyat, like this, then you're more careful who you're choosing. So that's just part of devotional service. But it's not based on the upadhi, it's based on your ability to appreciate so that you can apply it in Krishna consciousness. If you overextend and emphasize the upadhi, then it becomes a distraction. Is that? Because these things change. You know what I'm saying? That practical down-to-earth New York is basically gone. It's all hipsters now. So it doesn't have that flavor anymore. Like, there may be individuals, but as a general flavor, it's not there anymore. So every place is changing and morphing and all these things. That's the whole thing. It doesn't have the flavors that they used to. So you look for, you appreciate all devotees and respect all devotees and like that, but the close association with those that you actually can just comfortably sit and have a conversation and not have to be tiptoeing because every word you say might, you know, turn into a bouncing Benny, you know, mine and blow up. You know, bouncing Bennies? There's a kind of special mine that they... You know how normally you step on a mine, it just blows up on your foot. But this mine is special. When you step on it, it jumps up into the air and then blows up. Right? You know, the other one, you lose your foot. This one, it's like you lose everything. Right? So, you know, unless you love tiptoeing around and every word, I say, every word is an issue. Every word is, you know, every you know, how you say, you know, like that, like in the spiritual world. then you hang out with those people, because then they will be applying that in their life, becoming Krishna conscious. You, by hearing their application, their, you know, sincere, you know, thoughts on it, then you advance. But the point is pure devotion, the principles of that, that's the only universal thing. Nothing else is universal, because it's all conditional. So that's why we see these examples of all these great devotees, and they're from emperors, you know, down to, you know, very simple, poor Brahmins. Like that when we were the few stories back when Krishna went to Shutadeva and Bahulasva. You know, the king and that, you know, simple Brahmin. And he went to both of their houses. Right? So that's the whole thing. For Krishna, it's where is devotion? Where's pure devotion? That's what attracts Krishna. So that eventually has to be what attracts us. What form it's in, what the background it is, it really doesn't matter. Does that make sense? But, you know, for fun and that, you may talk whatever you talk. That's fine. Does that make sense? You know, because it says in Nectar Devotion, you can offer you know, special the items of your locale to Krishna. You know, as long as they're offerable, right? You know. Is that okay? Good.
Mm-hmm. I was asking you, usually we understand goodness to be cultivated, which were identified Lord knows. When we are preaching, people in passion ignorance. So
yeah, they're identifying, so therefore you preach according to what they'll understand. What language, what examples, what tone. But that's preaching. So whoever is favorable to listen, you preach to them. You may make them a devotee, you may inspire them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that in the future, as they're situated, that the two of you may hang out. They may hang out with someone else. Point is who puts you on the path? Then you're on the path. Then from there, then you develop your sexual relationships and all that. It may be the person who put you on the path, you can relate, so therefore then that goes down that line. But it doesn't have to be. It's just that some preacher can make them interested in devotional service. So don't worry about that. But if you find that there are certain areas in preaching that you do better at, and other areas where it's very difficult, if you can arrange it, work in the ones that are easier. Because you'll get more, you'll have more effect. But if other ones come up and the ones you're used to are not there, you don't ignore them because it's not your area. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Right. Another difficulty is that sometimes devotees, they don't catch the mood, but they really want this dadati, you know, the close association.
Yes.
And then how, we don't want to offend them, but we can't really relate. Like, as you explain, it's like so uptight.
Yeah. So that's why in front of the house there's a garden, and in the garden there's a little sitting place.
Okay.
Or if you're around, then you know you're at the temple. You sit on the bench there. You may not take them home. You may not go to their house. But you know they want to talk. They want to associate. Then you try your best. Best let them do all the talking. Then you don't have to worry. You just have to get your, how you say, gestures and all that right, nod and everything. Yeah. So. Yeah. Point is, you associate, but it doesn't have to be close. Right? Like that. Point is, it's about Krishna. Chapter 90, Summary of Lord Krishna's Glories. Pratigya, renunciation is not as important as enhancing one's attachment to Krishna. Right? So it's a very important point, is that renunciation, all these good qualities are important. It says not as important. They're important only because it's useful in Krishna's service. But it's not as important as the attachment to Krishna. Right? Why does Mother Jashoda cook for Krishna? She's just a fabulous cook, and he's really good at appreciating. He can, you know, the fine taste. He understands. So therefore, you know, it's kind of like you're cooking for eternity. So you need someone with a fine, refined taste to appreciate the subtleties in your difference of cooking, right? So that's why she cooks for him. No, it's because of her love for him, and because of that, that's why then she cooks for Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? Because that's her service. Right? Others, the cowherd boys don't cook for Krishna. They go out and wrestle and run around like that. Right? The servants, they do other things. Does that make sense? So the point is that attachment to Krishna is the main thing. Then there's the activities they perform, and then there's the qualities they use in those activities. So the qualities and activities are not as important as the attachment to Krishna. So if we just focus on trying to develop all these qualities and knowledge and skills and all that, that's good. But if that's more than one's developing the attachment for Krishna by the actual aspect of direct devotional service, does that make sense? Then it won't progress as nicely, because for Krishna it's the attachment. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 90th chapter, the symptoms of the queen's love while they played water sports, the power of the Yadavas, and eternal nature of Krishna's pastimes are described. Sardartha Darshani 10:91. Lord Krishna continued to reside in his opulent capital of Dwarka, together with the Yadus and his queens. He would enjoy sporting with his wives in the ponds on the palace grounds, squirting water on them with a syringe, and being squirted in turn. With his graceful gestures, loving words, and sidelong glances, he would enchant their hearts. In this way, the queens would become totally absorbed in thoughts of him. Sometimes after playing with the Lord in the water, they would address various creatures, Kurari and Chakravaka birds, the ocean, the moon, a cloud, a cuckoo, a mountain, a river, and so on, declaring their great attachment to Sri Krishna on the pretext of commiserating with these creatures. Lord Krishna begot 10 sons in the womb of each of his queens. Among these sons, Prajumna was foremost, being equal to his father in all transcendental qualities. Prajumna married Rukmi's daughter, and from her womb, Aniruddha was born. Aniruddha then married Rukmi's granddaughter and begot Viraj, or Vajra, who was the only Yadu prince to survive the Battle of Iron Clubs at Prabhas. From Vajra descended the remainder of the Yadu dynasty, beginning with Pratibahu. The members of the Yadu dynasty are virtually innumerable. Indeed, just to educate their children, the Yadus employed 38,800,000 teachers. Right? And each teacher then would have so many students. Before Lord Krishna appeared, many demons took birth in human families to harass the people of the world and destroy Brahminical culture. To subdue them, the Lord ordered the demigods to descend into the Yadu dynasty, which then expanded into 101 clans. All of the Yadus recognized Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and had unflinching faith in him. While resting, eating, walking, and so on, which they often did in his company, they would forget their own bodies in their transcendental happiness. So we have 101 clans that are all Yadus, all these different groups. You have Vrishnis, Bojas, and I think these are the sub-clans of all the things, and then within that they have. So all these different groups are there, but they all recognize Krishna. So they may function more within their groups, but because Krishna is the center, big occasions, they would be coming together, doing things together, then they work very nicely. But otherwise, you see, they function in their own groups. The 10th canto concludes with this promise of success for the sincere hearer. Quote, by regularly hearing, chanting, and meditating on the beautiful topics of Lord Mukunda, with ever-increasing sincerity, a mortal being will attain the divine kingdom of the Lord, where the inviolable Inviolable. Inviolable power of death holds no sway. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 14. The activities of Krishna and his queens in Dwarka. 15 to 27. The ecstatic trance of Krishna's queens. And 28 to 50. The Yadu dynasty. Verses 1 to 14. The activities of Krishna and his queens in Dwarka. Sukadev Goswami said, the master of the goddess of fortune resided happily in his capital city, Dwarka, which was endowed with all opulences and populated by the most eminent Vrishnis and their gorgeously dressed wives. When these beautiful women in the bloom of youth would play in the city's rooftops with balls and other toys, they shone like flashing lightning. The main streets of the city were always crowded with intoxicated elephants, exuding mada, and also with cavalry, richly adorned infantrymen, and soldiers riding chariots brilliantly decorated with gold. Gracing the cities, there were many gardens and parks with rows of flowering trees, where bees and birds would gather, filling all directions with their songs. Lord Krishna was the sole beloved of his 16,000 wives. Expanding himself into many forms, he enjoyed with each of his queens in her own richly furnished residence. On the grounds of these palaces were clear ponds, fragrant with the pollen of blooming Utpala, Kahlara, Kumuda, and Amboja lotuses, and filled with flocks of cooing birds. The Almighty Lord would enter those ponds and also various rivers and enjoy sporting in the water while his wives embraced him, leaving the red kumkuma from their breasts smeared on his body. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura writes, according to the maxim, all things should end sweetly. Srila Sukadeva Goswami describes the water sports of Krishna, but first as a stimulus, udipan for that, he describes the attractiveness of the city starting in the first verse, right? Because you set the scene, and then the pastime that's happening there will be even more enhanced. Because the main part is the main point, the interaction. But when you put it in a nice setting, then it gets better. Does that make sense? So that's why you have all these things. Yes?
One more point of all things and sweetly. Tenth canto is ending with this pastime rather than the pastime of Moksha Kanda.
Yes. Because otherwise you could say it ends the pastime, so that will come later. Yeah, very good point. So it should end sweetly. So then the description of the pastimes, that will come up as a description of some other point. But it won't be the description of the pastimes of Krishna as such, right? So that's where the variety comes in. That's where your jnana and kriya shaktis, then they're always providing all this variety like this. So that then within this, the interaction with Krishna and the devotees, that Ichashakti then comes to its most wonderful platform. You understand? But it's not dependent upon this. These are all servants too. Does that make sense? So what happens, we get attracted by this and we don't even worry about the pastime. So that's how we get here. But now when this is udipan for remembering Krishna and the pastime, then that gets us there. Right? Srila Jiva Goswami writes, concerning his mind,
we didn't?
Oh.
Complete.
Krishna enjoyed in all those houses, which are described in detail in the first five verses. Having described the enjoyment in the houses, he then described the enjoyment in the water. Right? So you had the place, the people, then their city, the palaces, all that, then the engagements that would go on and that in that whole wonderful environment. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, concentrating his mind, Sukadev remembers a special pastime filled with the highest happiness. This continues till the end of verse 24. First six verses describe a city, the city of Swayam Bhagavan. Thus the city was, by its very nature, most suitable for living joyfully and performing pastimes. See, because we have this idea that, no, the world can be perfect. Right? This is what we're looking for. But the problem in the material world, you don't have this. Why is this perfect? Because it's about Krishna. So when we try to get this without Krishna, you don't get it. It doesn't happen. Because it's connected to Krishna, therefore everything works so perfectly. Right? Is the whole universe going to align itself with us? What's the motive? Right? But Krishna is the most attractive. He's the origin. He's the one who his potency is making everything work. Therefore, one naturally then arranges all these things.
Usually, Maharaj, people say in India that people want Rama Rajya but not Ram.
Yes, they want Ram Rajya without Ram. Yeah, so like that. Thus, the city was by its very nature most suitable for living joyfully and performing pastimes. He lived there continually since it was greater than Vaikuntha. There he lived with his extraordinary consort, Rukmini. More and more, their details are then described. They had ever fresh beauty and youth that became increasingly remarkable. So, but it just keeps going. Why? Because the qualities and their affection and all that keeps developing. Okay. They had ever fresh... Okay. Having described their beauty, their attractive gestures are described. They played with balls and also sang and danced, Adi Bihi. Right? So it's, they did, and whatever else goes along. As they moved about while playing, they appeared to be lightning decorating the sky. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. The concluding portion of Krishna's pastimes is found in the 90th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this chapter, Sukadeva Goswami wanted to explain how Krishna lived happily at Dwarka with all opulences. Krishna's opulence of strength has already been displayed in his different pastimes. And now it will be shown how his residence at Dwarka displayed his opulence of wealth and beauty. Sukadeva Goswami continued. As Gandharvas joyfully sang his praises to the accompaniment of Mridanga, Panava, and Anaka drums, and as professional reciters known as Sutas, Magadhas, and Vandis played Veenas and recited poems praising him, Lord Krishna would play with his wives in the water. Laughing, the queens would squirt water on him with syringes, and he would squirt them back. Thus, Krishna would sport with his queens in the same way that the lord of the Yakshas sports with the Yakshi nymphs. Under the drenched clothing of the queens, their thighs and breasts would become visible. The flowers tied in their large braids would scatter as they sprayed water on their consort. And on the plea of trying to take away his syringe, they would embrace him. By his touch, their lusty feelings would increase, causing their faces to beam with smiles. Right? So the lusty means more and more that they want to serve Krishna, please Krishna. Right? But they're using the medium of the conjugal rasa, so that means that medium will increase. But it's not separate. Right, because we've already established that his supremacy. So now they can talk like this in this detail. Otherwise, we don't see it so much. Thus, Lord Krishna's queens shone with resplendent beauty. So that beauty is that affection and attraction for Krishna. Lord Krishna's flower garland would become smeared with kumkuma from their breasts. And his abundant locks of hair would become disheveled as a result of his absorption in the game. As the Lord repeatedly sprayed his young consorts, and they sprayed him in return, he enjoyed himself like the king of elephants, enjoying in the company of his bevy of she elephants. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, although it may be said that yogis also can expand their bodies into many forms, the yogic expansion and Lord Krishna's expansion are not the same. Krishna is therefore sometimes called Yogeshwara, the master of all yogis. In the Vedic literature, we find that the yogi Subhari Muni expanded himself into 8, but that expansion was like a television expansion. The television image is manifest in millions of expansions, but those expansions cannot act differently. They are simply reflections of the original and can only act exactly as the original does. Right? So you can't do something else. You can only do one thing. Krishna's expansion is not material, like the expansion of the television of the yogi. When Narada visited the different palaces of Krishna, he saw that Krishna, in his different expansions, was variously engaged in each and every palace of the queen. So when he expands, he does whatever different things with each person. It is also said that Krishna lived in Dwarka as the husband of the goddess of fortune. Queen Rukmini is the goddess of fortune, and all the other queens are her expansions. So Krishna, the chief of the Vrishni dynasty, enjoyed with the goddess of fortune in full opulence. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Means she's the primary queen because she's Mahalakshmi, right? And so then from there expand all these other different supporting moods. And so then in this way you get the 16,108 wives. And then they have their maid servants, and like this then it becomes, you know, unlimited. So, yeah. Does that make sense? So she's the primary one there. Now, in that, what is here is we're dealing with the Swakya. And so therefore the right wing comes out as the prominent. Right? But we see in left wing in the Parakya, then the left wing is prominent. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, Radharani, she comes as Rukmini. Right? But that left-wing mentality, Rukmini doesn't manifest. She expands as Satyabhama. That's then where that mentality is. Right? So then you'll see is that generally it's mentioned that Radharani is Satyabhama. Right? But the whole point is all of this all comes from Radharani. So it's actually starting from here, but that kind of personality, that nature of personality, that will, of Radharani will be seen in Satyabhama, not in Rukmini. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why you'll see sometimes both are mentioned. The queens of Krishna are described as permanently youthful and beautiful. Although Krishna had grandchildren and great-grandchildren, neither Krishna or his queens looked older than 16 or 20 years of age. The young queens were so beautiful that when they moved, they appeared like lightning moving in the sky. They were always dressed with excellent ornaments and garments, and were always engaged in sportive activities like dancing, singing, or playing ball on the roofs of the palaces. The dancing and tennis playing of girls in the material world are perverted reflections of the original pastimes of the original personality of Godhead, Krishna and his wives. You know, so then, especially when young, they, you know, try that energy, that high level like that, and then as they get older, then you remember about those things, but here they don't have to remember. They just are always like that. Right? Because that's the point. The material world is temporary. It always moves on. Right? So, you're either too young for all this, or too old. And then next life, then you're too young or too old. And then there's a blip in between, right? You know, but here, they always stay that way. That's the consistency of the rasa. The impersonalist would not dare believe that in the spiritual world, there are such varieties of enjoyment. But in order to demonstrate the factual, ever-blissful enjoyment of the in the spiritual world, Lord Krishna descended to this planet and showed that the spiritual world is not devoid of such pleasurable facilities of life. Right? So, note here, in order to demonstrate the factual, right? Okay. The only difference is that in the spiritual world, such facilities are eternal, never-ending. Never-ending occurrences, whereas in the material world they are simply impermanent, perverted reflections. Someone has more karma, it lasts, goes a little longer. Someone has less karma, it never even happens at all. It's just that's the way it works. But the spiritual world then is perfect. So because of the imperfect here, someone becomes an impersonalist, then they can't believe that it can be perfect in the spiritual world because they already tried to make it perfect here, right? And since they consider themselves God, they couldn't do it, so it must not exist. So they'll just merge in Brahman and be done with it. Sukadev Goswami continued, afterwards, Lord Krishna and his wives would give the ornaments and clothing they had worn during their water sports to the male and female performers, who earned their livelihood from singing and from playing musical instruments. Right? So they're giving all these nice things like this. So how much opulence is there? That they're so opulent, and then they can give that all away. Right? Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after enjoying fully amongst themselves, the queens and Lord Krishna would come out of the water, and they would give up their wet garments, which were very valuable, to be taken away by the professional singers and dancers. These singers and dancers had no means of subsistence other than the rewards of valuable garments and ornaments left by the queens and kings on such occasions. Right? Because they're part of the court. So they're not doing something else other than, you know, playing the music, dancing, glorifying, doing these kind of activities. So whenever these are going on in the court or like this when it's sports or things, that they're involved, and so they're always receiving that kind of charity. The whole system of society was so well planned that all the members of society in their different positions as Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras had no difficulty in earning their livelihood. There was no competition among the divisions of society. The original conception of the caste system was so planned that a group of men engaged in a particular type of occupation would not compete with another group of men engaged in different occupation. Right? In the modern, then, everyone wants to compete because they see they're getting more benefit. But in doing so, they don't really get more benefit. And then in this way, it breaks down. No one gets any benefit. But then I guess you could say it's all equal. Everybody's miserable. Right? Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. In this way, Lord Krishna would sport with his queens, totally captivating their hearts, with his gestures, talks, glances, and smiles, and also with his jokes, playful exchanges, and embraces. The queens would become stunned in a static trance, their minds absorbed in Krishna alone. Then, thinking of the lotus-eyed Lord, they would speak as if insane. Please hear those words from me as I recite them, relate them. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, if someone remains always attached to Krishna, it is to be understood that he is liberated and his life is successful. With any devotee who loves Krishna with his heart and soul, Krishna reciprocates in such a way that the devotee cannot but remain attached to him. The reciprocal dealings of Krishna and his devotees are so attractive that a devotee cannot think of any subject matter other than Krishna. Right? It's so attractive that you can't think of anything else because why would you? You understand? It's just so nice that all these others, they lose interest. But as we practice devotional service, as we progress, we'll find that we start getting more and more of a taste for the devotional activities. Then the other activities, they start to lose their interest. So there won't be a time when one doesn't have one and doesn't have the other. Like that. Or if you find that, then turn your attention to Krishna, because going backwards never really works. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, they sometimes became as if mad, as if disturbed in mind by some drug. They would sometimes remain silent for a moment, as if sleeping, thinking whether Krishna was present or not. They concluded he was not there, and talked with loss of all sense of judgment, like a sleeping person talking. The reason for their madness was that they thought without deviation only of Krishna, who freed them from all suffering. If he was present, he would remain silent, expecting to hear them speak. This is the type of separation called vaichitra, in which the lover is present but thought to be absent. This is accepted by Vopadeva in Mukta Phala. It is also described by Sri Harsha and others. Right, so it's a, yeah. Verses 15 to 27. The ecstatic trance of Krishna's queens. Out of this madness, they see their own emotional state everywhere, such as in the female offspring. This is expressed in 10 verses. Sardartha Darshani 10:90, 15. The queen said, O Kurari bird, Kurari. Okay, because Kurari is something else. Okay, Kurari. Kurari, O Kurari bird, you are lamenting. Now it is night, and somewhere in this world the Supreme Lord is asleep in a hidden place. But you are wide awake, O friend, unable to fall asleep. Is it that, like us, you have had your heart pierced to the core by the lotus-eyed Lord's munificent, playful, smiling glances? Right. So, you understand? So out of this particular manifestation of this madness, they see that their emotions, that they're feeling, they see it in everything else. So wherever they see, then they're saying this, that one is talking to the Kurari? Kurari. Kurari bird. Someone else is talking to, you know, something like this. So they're extending that. So that means that the devotional ecstasy has reached quite a very intense position. Yeah? Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, I offer respects to the queens whose hearts are bewildered by prema. By their mercy, one can understand the meaning of their words. Right? So, by their mercy, then you can understand what it is that they're saying, not meaning just the words, but that devotion that they have. Huh? So we see Sanatana Goswami is respecting because that intense, that complete absorption, that's something that's desirable. So we don't go, oh, this is Dwarka, we're not interested. No. The Brajbasis, they're interested in that. When they hear this, that's the kind of attraction they want for Krishna. But it'll have the flavor of Braj, of course, but the principle of that attraction. Though they had direct association with the Lord, because of intense bhava, they appeared like others in separation, because of special symptoms, or because of the strength of their love. They considered all others to have similar bhava for the Lord. They considered the kurari, which naturally cries at night, to have pain on not attaining Krishna. Or it is not at night, and there are no kurari or other birds. While playing in the water, they become subject to transformations like unmada because of intense prema. So, or it may be it's daytime. There are no birds. But then they think of that kurari and how they lament at night, and so now they're lamenting, so they think that mood is present there in them, so they're there, and so they start talking to them even though it's daytime and there is no kurari bird. While playing in the water, they become subject to transformations. In each verse, a different queen speaks. Since they speak as if insane, at the same time, with different statements, there's no relationship between verses. And because of the lack of relationship, the verses possess great qualities individually. And so each one is saying, like we see the acharyas in those points that the gopis made when Uddhava came, and different gopis came forward, then the acharyas would point out who was there, what group they're for, you know, what's the meaning of that. Does that make sense? Note, for the next 9 verses, 16 to 24, we are providing Srila Prabhupada's translations interlaced with his short commentaries from Krishna book, instead of quoting the BBT verses in order to avoid repetition and maintain the flow. Because Prabhupada, there's so many things you could comment on each one. To avoid that, then Prabhupada's already nicely worked it in, given the translations, and worked in the points so that they apply for all of them, but it's stated in the specific verse that he's commenting on. The queens continue. Hello, Chakravaka. Why have you closed your eyes? Are you searching after your husband, who may have gone to foreign countries? Why are you lamenting so pitiably? Alas, it appears that you are very much aggrieved. Or is it a fact that you also are willing to become an eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? We think that you are anxious to put a garland on the lotus feet of the Lord and then place it on your hair. Okay, so just all the things that they're thinking, they're just projecting on their surroundings. So that's one of the symptoms of this kind of devotional ecstasy. Oh dear ocean, why are you roaring all day and night? Don't you like to sleep? We think you have been attacked by insomnia, or, if we are not wrong, our dear Shyamasundar has tactfully taken away your gravity and power of forbearance. Which are your natural qualifications? Is it a fact that for this reason you are suffering from insomnia like us? Yes, we admit that there is no remedy for this disease. So, they're feeling these, and then where that might be reflected, that's then where they're seeing it. Right. Dear moon god, we think you have been attacked by a severe type of tuberculosis. For this reason, you are becoming thinner and thinner day by day. Oh Lord, you are now so weak that your thin rays cannot dissipate the darkness of night. Or is it a fact that, like us, you have been stunned by the mysteriously sweet words of our Lord Shyamasundara? Is it a fact that it is because of this severe anxiety that you are so brave? O breeze from the Himalayas, what have we done to you that you are so intent on teasing us by awakening our lust to meet Krishna? Do you not know that we have already been injured by the crooked policy of the Personality of Godhead? Please, Himalayan breeze, Please know that we have already been stricken. There is no need to injure us more and more. Dear beautiful cloud, the color of your beautiful body exactly resembles the bodily hue of our dear most Shyamasundara. We think, therefore, that you are very dear to our Lord, the chief of the dynasty of the Yadus. And because you are so dear to him, you are absorbed in meditation exactly as we are. We can appreciate that your heart is full of anxiety for Shyamasundara. You appear excessively eager to see him, and we see that for this reason only, drops of tears are gliding down from your eyes, just as they are from ours. Dear Black Cloud, we must admit frankly that to establish an intimate relation with Shyamasundara means to purchase unnecessary anxieties while we are otherwise comfortable at home. That means all their material facilities are fine, but because of that separation from Krishna, then there's an anxiety. But otherwise, materially, the facilities they all have. There's nothing else there. Generally, the cuckoo sounds its cooing vibration at the end of night or early in the morning. When the queens heard the cooing of the cuckoo at the end of night, they said, "Dear cuckoo, your voice is very sweet. As soon as you vibrate your sweet voice, we immediately remember Shyamasundara, because your voice exactly resembles his. We must frankly admit that your voice is imbued with nectar, and it is so invigorating that it is competent to bring back life to those who are almost dead in separation from their dearmost friend. So we are very much obliged to you. Please let us know how we can welcome you or how we can do something for you." So others that had their mood, and so they were relating. This one is that they have the same kind of tone or gives that same feeling like Krishna does when he speaks. So then they're very happy that they're reminding them of Krishna. So they'd like to do something for them. The queens continued talking like that, and they addressed the mountain as follows. "Dear mountain, you are very generous. By your gravity alone, only the whole crust of this earth is properly maintained. Although because you are discharging your duties very faithfully, you do not know how to move. Because you are so grave, you do not move hither and thither, nor do you say anything. Rather, you always appear in a thoughtful mood. It may be that you are always thinking of a very grave and important subject matter, but we can guess very clearly that you are thinking of what you are thinking of. We are sure that you are thinking of placing the lotus feet of Shyamasundara on your raised peaks, as we want to place his lotus feet on our raised breasts. Dear dry rivers, we know that because this is the summer season, all your beds are dry and you have no water. Because all your water has now been dried up, you are no longer beautified by blooming lotus flowers. At the present moment, you appear very lean and thin. So we can understand that your position is exactly like ours. We have lost everything due to being separated from Shyamasundara, and we no longer hear his pleasing words. Our hearts no longer work properly, and therefore we also have become very lean and thin. We think, therefore, that you are just like us. You have turned lean and thin because you're not getting any water from your husband, the ocean, through the clouds. So the example given herewith by the queens is very appropriate. The riverbeds become dry when the ocean no longer supplies water through the clouds. The ocean is supposed to be the husband of the river, and therefore is supposed to support her. Unless a woman is supported by her husband with the necessities of life, she also becomes as dry as a riverbed. One queen addressed the swan as follows. "My dear swan, please come here. Come here. You are welcome. Please sit down and take some milk. My dear swan, can you tell me if you have any message from Shyamasundara? I take you to be a messenger from him. If you have any such news, please tell me. Our Shyamasundara is always very independent. He never comes under the control of anyone. We have all failed to control him, and therefore we ask you, is he keeping himself well? I may inform you that Shyamasundara is very fickle. His friendship is always temporary. It breaks even at slight agitation. But would you kindly explain why he is so unkind to me? Formerly he said that I alone am his dearmost wife. Does he remember this assurance? Anyway, you are welcome. Please sit down. But I cannot accept your entreaty to go to Shyamasundar. When he does not care for me, why should I be mad after him? I am very sorry to let you know that you have become the messenger of a poor-hearted soul. You are asking me to go to him, but I am not going. Why? What is that? You are talking of his coming to me. Does he desire to come here to fulfill my long expectation for him? All right, you may bring him here, but don't bring with him his most beloved goddess of fortune. Do you think that he cannot be separated from the goddess of fortune even for a moment? Could he not come here alone without Lakshmi? His behavior is very displeasing. Does it mean that without Lakshmi, Shyamasundar cannot be happy? Can't he be happy with any other wife? Does it mean that the goddess of fortune has the ocean of love for him, and none of us can compare to her? It's they keep going back and forth between all these moods.
It is seen and suffering
gopis also. Yes. Yes, the principle that Sambhogan and Vipralamba, it's a standard thing. It's just the intensity that you see in the gopis is greater. But otherwise, this is as close as you'll get. Sukadeva Goswami said, by thus speaking and acting with such ecstatic love for Lord Krishna, the master of all masters of mystic yoga, his loving wives attain the ultimate goal of life. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. All the wives of Lord Krishna were completely absorbed in thought of him. Krishna is known as Yogeshwara, the master of all yogis. And all the wives of Krishna at Dwarka used to keep this Yogeshwara within their hearts. Instead of trying to be master of all yogic mystic powers, it's better if one simply keeps the supreme Yogeshwar Krishna within the heart. Right? So yogis, they may meditate on Krishna, get mystic powers. So what they want is the mystic powers. But for the wives of Krishna, then instead of going for these mystic powers, they go for the Lord of all these mystic powers. Because he's much more interesting than the mystic powers themselves. Thus, one's life can become perfect, and one can very easily be transferred to the kingdom of God. It is to be understood that all the queens of Krishna who lived with him at Dwarka were in their previous lives very greatly exalted devotees who wanted to establish a relationship with Krishna in conjugal love. Thus, they were given the chance to become his wives and enjoy a constant, loving relationship with him. Ultimately, they were all transferred to the Vaikuntha planets. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, Sukadev now explains the greatness of the queens having such prema, by which they controlled the Lord. In the matter stated by a similar bhava, they attained the goal. This indicates the greatness of that bhava. This love was directed to Krishna, who attracts all hearts, but it is difficult to attain for others, since he is the Lord of all masters of yoga. With effort, they can attain something serving in the mind, and by his special shakti, he was able to enjoy with each one of the queens at the same time. This bhava was continuous, right? So that's why he's Yogeshwara, because let him, he's the one, he engages his mystic potencies in his pastimes with the devotees. The devotee never needs to use any, because whatever the situation, it's all for pleasing Krishna, and all these situations will naturally be arranged. And we simply have to follow those who know how to engage those situations. So as the bhava was continuous, not ever bringing full satisfaction, means it was so nice you want more, and it just keeps growing. So it's not like the material world where there's no satisfaction because it drops off and there's nothing. No, this means it's the same amount of satisfaction as before, the same amount of devotional ecstasy, but your attraction and taste for serving Krishna increases. So you want to satisfy that increased, but it's not that the other has diminished. From the material world, there's something and then it diminishes. Then you endeavor for more and then it diminishes. But in the spiritual world, it just keeps going. It's when they say an ocean, that's what's meant. It's whatever there's now, that happiness, it will be there at the next moment. It'll never go away eternally. And so you just keep adding on to that. So that means it just grows. It's an unlimited ocean. They attain the highest state of highest pastimes. Each of them directly realized, controlled by his devotee. He is enjoying with me alone at all times, in all ways. He never separates from me at any time for any reason. So each of them felt that, and he was with each one of them. But by his being Yogeshwara, he was with each one of them, and each one of them was able to think like this and experience like this. Because he said directly realized. So he's always with them, always doing these things. Okay? Sukadev Goswami continued, "The Lord, whom countless songs glorify in countless ways, forcibly attracts the minds of all women who simply hear about him. What to speak then of those women who see him directly? And how could one possibly describe the great austerities that have been performed by the women who perfectly served him, the spiritual master of the universe, in pure ecstatic love? Thinking of him as their husband, they rendered such intimate services as massaging his feet." Srila Jiva Goswami writes, "Now Sukadev glorifies Krishna, he who, simply being heard, who is the subject of songs sung by great singers or many literary works, or who is glorified profusely by singers or literary works, attracts the minds of women. What to speak of attracting the minds of women who see him?" Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, "They and no others are the most fortunate. They serve him with complete dedication, not depending on anything else. Massaging his feet, washing his feet, combing his hair, fanning him, etc., is the most worthy of worship among all. He is the most worthy of worship among all beings such as Brahma. He is most rare to attain. They serve him, thinking of him as their husband. Bhartri Bhudhya, how to describe the fortune of their worship? What one cannot describe its greatness. Sukadev indicates the mood of the gopis, though that is the highest prema. One cannot describe its greatness. Sukadev indicates the mood of the gopis. Though that is the highest prema, he gives respects to the queen's love for Krishna as a husband, in which they can freely serve him." Right, so even though the mood of the gopis may be higher, he still gives respects to the queen who loves because of how great it is, how they're freely serving, how they're functioning on the platform of pure devotion. So that's the point. Those who are rasiks, they appreciate any devotional service that's been rendered. So it's not that this whole idea is, oh, we're only interested in Braja and the gopis and all that. No. Rasa is there. You may have your preference, but that doesn't mean you can't eat anything else. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it's like a child. Okay, they like something, they won't eat anything else. Do we consider that mature? No. But then an adult, someone who can appreciate all different kinds of cuisines and preparations and all that, they may have their favorites, but they can appreciate that wide range. That's maturity. Right? But when it's presented that maturity is, oh no, we're just exclusively only about Krishna, his pastimes. But it's not about Krishna, it's about themselves. Right? Because it's that same Krishna that's doing all these other things. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Is that where we are? No.
Yes.
Yeah? There's two of those. No, we're up here. We're the upper one. "The objective of self-realization is one, Krishna. Therefore, although the dealings of the queens with Krishna appear like ordinary dealings between husband and wife, the principal point to be observed is the queen's attachment for Krishna." Right? So that's the principal point. They're attached, and that's glorious. "The entire process of austerity and penance is meant to detach one from the material world and enhance one's attachment to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Right, so that's always the point. Whatever you're doing, whatever, that's why we follow the rules and regulations. That's why we do these things, is to become detached from the material and therefore become attached to Krishna. So the principal point is attachment to Krishna. The secondary is this detachment from the material world. So that's why then all the rules and regulations are followed, because in performing those duties, one tends to become detached. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
And we take inspiration from their attachment to Krishna.
Yeah, and their attachment for Krishna, we get inspired. And we see they're not interested in anything else. Even though they have all facility, there's no focus on that. They even say themselves, we have all this, but they are only interested in Krishna. Right? Because for them, that's all to be used in Krishna's service. Is that verses 28-50, the Yadu dynasty. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus observing the principles of duty enunciated in the Vedas, Lord Krishna, the goal of the saintly devotees, repeatedly demonstrated how one can achieve at home the objectives of religiosity, economic development, and regulated sense gratification, while fulfilling the highest standards of religious household life. Krishna maintained more than 16,100 wives. Right, so these things is so that you can see how Dharma Artha Kama is engaged in Krishna's service. Why? Because you don't see it for yourself. You have that detachment. But it's still Dharma Artha and Kama, then the mood of engaging it is that of detachment, but it's because it's about Krishna's pleasure, so the attachment to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, having described Krishna's activities, which clearly display his pastime nature, Sukadeva now describes how he gave happiness to all by being absorbed in Vedic Dharma. He is the shelter of devotees, absorbed in his pastimes, constantly engaged in Dharma like sacrifices prescribed by the Vedas. He showed the household goals of Dharma, Artha, and Kama. He taught this to others since he is also the shelter of persons dedicated. He is also the shelter of persons dedicated to Dharma, as well as of persons absorbed in his pastimes. Right? So those who are committed to Dharma, he's also their shelter. Right? Like that. But as well as those who are absorbed in his pastimes. So that's actually the point. So being absorbed in the Dharma, then that's good, but more important is that it goes forward into Krishna's pastimes. Because Krishna performed all the activities of Dharma perfectly, but is in the exchange of affection between him and his devotees. Right? So those who take shelter of the Dharma and do because they should, they're situated in goodness, so that's very good. Now all they have to do is add Krishna, and it's perfect. Right? So Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Krishna is the shelter of all persons advancing in self-realization. As an ideal householder, he lived with his wives and performed the Vedic rituals just to show less intelligent persons that the Supreme Lord is never impersonal. Krishna lived with wives and children in all opulence, exactly like an ordinary conditioned soul, just to teach those souls who are actually conditioned that they must enter into the family circle of Krishna, where he is the center. For example, the members of the Yadu dynasty lived in the family of Krishna, and Krishna was the center of all their activities. So one's trying to make Krishna the center. So technically that is Grihastha. Right? We would call that technically Grihastha life. But also Grihastha life of Krishna is not the center. It is, but it's the subdivision where it's not about Krishna. That's called Grihamedi. Right? So it's not the Grihamedi something else. Right, you may have Grihamedis who don't follow the Vedas and are completely, you know, gross materialists. But you can also have those who follow nicely all the different activities, but Krishna is not the main center. Right? Renunciation is not as important as enhancing one's attachment to Krishna. The Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant for this purpose. We are preaching the principle that it does not matter whether a man is a sannyasi or grihastha, householder. One simply has to increase his attachment for Krishna, and then his life is successful. Following in the footsteps of Lord Sri Krishna, one can live with his family members or within the society or nation, not for the purpose of indulging in sense gratification, but to realize Krishna by advancing in attachment for him. Okay, so now it's coming to that point, it's not just thinking about developing that attachment. Because what you're attached to is what you do. What you're attached to, that's what you value. Mm-hmm. That makes sense? Mm-hmm.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in his one of the bhajans, Kriya Thakur Vani Thakur Sadahari Rami Rakur.
Yes, yes. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Among those jewel-like women were eight principal queens headed by Rukmini. I have already described them one after another. O King, along with their sons, the Supreme Lord Krishna, whose endeavor never fails, begot 10 sons and each of his many wives. Right, so Rukmini is your main, then you has there's 7 others, so that there's 8 total, that they're you could say the primary queens. And then all others then are following behind that. Does that make sense? So that means it's just the expansions are just expanding like that. The Supreme Lord Krishna, whose endeavor never fails, okay, begot 10 sons and each of his many wives. Among these sons, all possessing unlimited valor, 18 were Maharathas of great renown. Now hear their names from me. They were Prajumna, Aniruddha, Deeptiman, Banu, Samba, Madhu, Brihadbanu, Chitrabanu, Vrika, Aruna, Pushkara, Vedabahu, Shrutadev, Sunandana, Chitrabahu, Virupa, Kavi, and Nyagrodha. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. Among Krishna's greatly powerful sons, 18 sons were Maharathas. The Maharathas could fight alone against many thousands of foot soldiers, charioteers, cavalry, and elephants. The reputation of these 18 sons are very widespread and are described in almost all the Vedic literatures. And so whenever they bring up, they'll always bring up about these 18. Sukadeva Goswami continued. O best of kings, of these sons begotten by Lord Krishna, the enemy of Madhu, the most prominent was Rukmini's son Prajumna. He was just like his father. The great warrior Prajumna married Rukmini's daughter, Rukmavati, who gave birth to Aniruddha. He was as strong as 10,000 elephants. Rukmini's daughter's son, Aniruddha, married Rukmini's son's daughter, Rochana. From her was born Vajra, who would remain among the few survivors of the Yadu's battle with clubs. From Vajra came Pratibahu, whose son was Subahu. Subahu's son was Santasena, and from Santasena, from whom?
Shatasena.
Okay, Shatasena was born. No one born in this family was poor in wealth or progeny, short-lived, weak, or neglectful of Brahminical culture. Right? So they all followed. Yes.
Vajra is the one who carved the deities of Krishna?
Yeah, I think he's the one that went around and established so many things, made deities and all that. So that's why if he's done it, then you know it must be good.
So he's the son of Aniruddha, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Aniruddha's son, from who was born? Vajra, yes.
Great
Vajra.
Great grandson of Krishna.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, above all, the members of the Yadu dynasty were staunch devotees of the Brahminical culture. It is the duty of the Kshatriya kings to maintain the Brahminical culture and protect the qualified Brahmanas. And all those kings discharge their duties rightly. Right? So they respect the Brahmins like that, but they also follow the Brahmins. So they're also practicing. Right? So the same culture they're following, but that culture is led by the Brahmins. Right? So we say that Vedic culture is Brahminical culture. It means it's the culture of the Brahmins, and then everybody follows that. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The Yadu dynasty produced innumerable great men of famous deeds. Even in tens of thousands of years, O King, one could never count them all. I have heard from authoritative sources that the Yadu family employed 38,800,000 teachers just to educate their children. Who can count all the great Yadavas, when among them King Ugrasena alone was accompanied by an entourage of 30 trillion attendants? Right? So Prabhupada mentions that these are his personal bodyguards. So that means of the military, then you have the best. And then the best of the best, that is then the entourage of the king. And so that was 30 trillion attendance.
No,
they don't. Well, you saw how big wide roads and gardens and trees, they have no problem.
As time and space is...
Yeah, there's no time and space there, so they have no problem. But could it be, if you have such qualified people, could it be overpopulation? No. Yeah. You know, it's just like, remember in our temple, you'd have one single house. Let's see what it was. You had downstairs, you had a kitchen, you had a basement. Then there was like, I don't know, I guess you could say, yeah, two rooms up there. There was a third floor, there were a few rooms. So it was a house for a big family. But there were 50 devotees living in it, you know, very peacefully, you know, it all goes on. So that's the whole point is that the when you have more qualification, you can stick more people there. Probably we were renting the house because the people that did live there couldn't tolerate each other and then all went off in different directions. Right? Yeah.
So basically Chinese.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, that's the same principle. So they wouldn't have any problem. They would come into the temple and go, okay, that's got the right amount of people in it. You're not wasting space. The savage descendants of Diti, who had been killed in past ages in battles between the demigods and demons, took birth among human beings and arrogantly harassed the general populace. To subdue these demons, Lord Hari told the demigods to descend into the dynasty of Yadu. They comprised 101 clans, O king. Because Lord Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, the Yadavas accept him as their ultimate authority. And among them, all those who were his intimate associates especially flourished. So they had 101 clans. That means they had their hierarchy in their clans and the head of their clan. But all these clans accepted Lord Krishna as the supreme authority. And then all those who were especially favored by him, those who had the most close devotees and all, then they also, everything also went very well for them. The Vrishnis were so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that they forgot their own bodies while sleeping, sitting, walking, conversing, playing, bathing, and so on. Right? Isn't that the Shema? That's it. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the love for Krishna was so intense that then their regular activities in sitting, sleeping, traveling, talking, sporting, cleansing, bathing, they were simply absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and paid no attention to bodily necessities, right? So just out of habit they would do. So the material energy would take care of them. If you're so absorbed in Krishna, then she'll take care. That is the symptom of a pure devotee of Krishna. Just as when a man is fully absorbed in some particular thought, he sometimes forgets his other bodily activities. The members of the Yadu dynasty acted automatically for their bodily necessities, right? So it came out right. It wasn't a freak show. You know, they all dressed properly and all that. But if it is, it's just thinking for Krishna. But for themselves, they just didn't notice these things. But their actual attention was always fixed on Krishna. Their bodily activities were performed mechanically. But their minds were always absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The heavenly Ganges is a holy place of pilgrimage because their waters wash Krishna's lotus feet. But when the Lord descended among the Yadus, his glories eclipsed the Ganges as a holy place. Both those who hated Krishna and those who loved him attained eternal forms like his in the spiritual world. The unattainable and supremely self-satisfied goddess of fortune, for the sake of whose favor everyone else struggles, belongs to him alone. His name destroys all inauspiciousness when heard or chanted. Oh, is this the Jayati Janani Vaso verse? No. It's from Bhagavatam. It may be there, but it's from here that I know. It's from Bhagavatam. He alone has set forth the principles of the various succession of sages. What wonder is it that he, whose personal weapon is the wheel of time, relieved the burden of the earth? 21. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 47 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 18, entitled The Perfection of the Mellows of Pure Love, the Glories of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Mahima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. Yeah, I think we'll stop because the next purport then goes on for a while.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura.